Montana's economy has experienced both tremendous highs and worrisome lows over the past year, with population and business growth being some of the positives, but housing and labor shortages some of the negatives. Specifically, housing and its current imbalance across Montana is the main topic of discussion at this year's Economic Outlook Seminar, put on by the Bureau of Business and Economic Research. In this episode of the podcast, Tom travels to Butte at the Copper King Hotel and Convention Center, both to attend the seminar and to chat with its speakers and attendees. You get to hear from Mike McLeod from the McLeod Real Estate Group, Montana Business Alliance Executive Director Christina Henderson, the Bureau of Business and Economic Research's Director Pat Barkey, and keynote speaker and attorney Abigail St. Lawrence to talk about Butte, its economic potential along with the rest of Montana, the seminar itself, and the economic forecast for Montana.
Tom Schultz alongside. Thanks for being here. Housing is one of the focuses here as part of this seminar series. You get an overall view of our economy from a lot of different aspects. You get timber. Christina Henderson's going to join us a bit later on. The Montana High Tech Business Alliance, great organization. Also a bit later on, too, Abigail St. Lawrence, too. And we'll talk. She's the keynote speaker for this seminar series this time around, 47th annual. Let's get right into Butte, America here as Mike McLeod is with us. McLeod Real Estate Group. Good morning, Mike. How you doing?
Morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm good, and good. I appreciate you being here.
Yeah, it's thank you for having me.
Great to be in Butte. Butte, America has, and I go Butte, America, just because I learned it that way a long time ago. It has a special place in Montana's heart, doesn't it?
I think so. Yeah, it really does. Everybody you talk to either knows somebody from Butte or was from Butte.
Yeah, or Anaconda down the road, they'll say. Roads lead through Anaconda. But tell us how, and I want to talk about this housing market because Patrick Barkey, the director of the BBER, just had a presentation about that. It'll be part of the focus here, too. Housing prices rising 30% in Bozeman, 20-plus percent in Missoula. We're seeing that in a lot of markets. How is it in Butte?
You know, Butte's real similar to the rest of the state as far as the trend. It's been upward. Butte's always been a very kind of a steady eddy, if you will, market where it's just increased in smaller increments, and then the last couple years, like everywhere else, we've really seen an uptick.
An uptick that has caused some problems down the line.
Well, we were just talking off air there, and it's a good market for somebody that's exiting the market, to be quite honest with you, as far as they don't have anything else to go buy. It's a tough market, I think, around the whole state, but even here in Butte for young couples that are trying to get into a home that maybe isn't as affordable as it used to be, or somebody that's looking to sell and move up. There's really nowhere for them to move up to with the lack of inventory. So, you know, overall, it's the prices have increased, which I guess is a good thing, but it depends who you are in the market, I would say, that whether it's a good market or not.
Does that concern you where you're at? Because I know that part of, well, it's the American dream, but you want young people into home ownership because that's really their first and best opportunity to create wealth. And we have seen where it's become difficult, not only in Montana, but in a lot of places. How do you approach that as a realtor?
Well, it is difficult, and I would say, you know, I've been doing it 29 years and kind of been through a lot of different markets, but I think the ones that are really getting hit are these first-time buyers. It is difficult, or for folks that if they do want to trade up, have a house to sell and it's contingent on that, it just makes it difficult. And at the end of the day, I think, you know, we talk about the economies around the state here in Butte. Really what it comes down to is inventory, and we've got a tremendous lack of inventory just like everybody else. If I could give you kind of an idea, back in the day, I will say, but, you know, a few years ago, during our peak season, we'd have 300-plus houses on the market in Butte, which was about right, 325 during the selling season, the spring into the fall. What we ended up with a year ago, well, I'll go back pre-pandemic, the year or two before the pandemic, we were down around 200 houses, and I would say that the prices are going up. I'm like, look, it's the inventory is really what's driving that. We don't have any inventory. Last year in the spring when things really took off, our inventory level of active listings, 30, 40 houses on the market. As of Monday, we have 30 active listings in Butte. What isn't said in that is, you know, listings that are on the market, they're under contract. So, for example, we've got 30 today, and we've got 57 that are on the market but under contract. So, you know, until we – that's just a supply and demand thing. Yeah. And we need more supply.
Yeah, and you know? And you were talking, and you'll be on a panel here at this seminar, Economic Outlook Seminar from the BBER. You'll be on a panel. You were talking with one of the developers, and they're looking at expanding that, right?
Yeah, there's a local developer. I think they're bringing about 80 houses onto the market, new construction, which will be fantastic, and I think they'll do quite well. We've had a couple of developments here in Butte in the last couple of years. You know, for us, if somebody was to bring to market 20 or 30 homes, that's a pretty good sized development in Butte. But anybody that has, they've sold them pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But again, we need, you know, we just need more inventory.
Well, and you've got, for Butte, you know, it's a historic community. Mike McLeod is with us, McLeod Real Estate Group. Again, we're live at the Copper King, the BBER Economic Outlook Series, again, focusing on housing. Butte's historic town. There's a lot of older properties around here as well. How have you seen that market adjust to what we've got high inflation now. We're going to see our mortgage rates go up. The available inventory, what's the condition of that?
Well, the condition, the upside is it's much better.
Okay.
We've seen some pretty good influence of outside buyer investors. And Pat Barkey hit it on the head. They're looking at single family as much as anything. You know, our duplexes, fourplexes, things like that hit the market and go rather quickly. But what we're seeing with the outside investors when they come in, they're rehabbing those properties. They're making them nicer.
Yeah.
And I think that's been a real good thing.
I think you've seen that in other communities, haven't you?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. One of the things that that Dr. Barkey had talked about too is the labor market. What's your sense of that and how it is affecting inflation in a lot of ways? It goes hand in hand with housing availability. What do you see there, Mike?
Well, it's, you know, that we're lacking in the labor. The construction folks I talk to, you know, you hear about the service industries, the restaurants and things like that, where they have so much trouble keeping people staffed. But I do hear that a lot with the contractors and that, as far as getting tradesmen and working for them. And I think it's been a challenge.
Is there any a little more on that? Have they talked about what they are doing to try to address that? Are they not having the opportunities to develop because of it? What is the real on the ground effect of that?
Well,
now?
I think the on ground effect of it is as much as anything is probably is the prices. I think that pushes. It isn't just the materials. I think the labor, for good reason, we have a lack of supply of labor force, and so the plumber, the electrician, they can charge more, and that drives things up. And it's just a matter of it isn't so much what you pay anymore; it's just finding somebody to do the work.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Do you, as a real estate group, do you try to address that? There's a lot of policies that are affecting our economy, obviously, and housing, as Dr. Barkey had noted. And he was here early on with a presentation. What's affecting Montana is affecting a lot of the region as well. What do you make about of that?
Of the labor itself?
Yeah.
Well, it seems like there's a concerted effort, at least locally, to entice younger folks to get into that business. But I just know it's a challenge. It doesn't seem like the interest is there like it once was. But I know that we've got an excellent two-year college here. Highlands College is part of Montana Tech. This isn't direct to that labor, but the Linesman's College, they've got a CDL program now. They just implemented things like that. So I think they're doing a good job trying to attract younger folks to do it, but I know it's a challenge.
That's interesting. Again, Mike McLeod with us, McLeod Real Estate Group. Let's get to the sense of Butte here. I know a lot of people are concerned about this labor market, but I want to get your sense, Mike, on how the community has come through the pandemic.
Well, I'm awful biased with it, but Butte's it's a pretty resilient place,
yeah.
Right? And so it doesn't matter what it is. It seems like we kind of get through just about anything. So things seem to be going well. It seems to be that people are out and about more. They have been for quite some time. We've got a lot of things that we rely on locally here, the festivals in the summer and things like that we haven't been able to do, that it sounds like we're going to be doing this summer. It attracts a lot of outside people to come here, and some of them ended up investing and things like that. But I think the overall sense in Butte is an optimistic one for sure.
That's Butte America. You know, it sits right in the central part of our state of Montana. It's sort of a kind of, it's always been a bit of the heartbeat of Montana.
Well, you know, if you look at Butte from outside the lens of a Montanan, who we, you know, they love to give us grief. Something always happened in Butte, some story that happened to him, right? But if you're coming from out of the area, and you want to come and be in Montana and experience Montana, Butte's a pretty tough spot to miss. I mean, as far as, we got some animals coming to us.
That's right. two big black Labradors. Let's get a microphone on those dogs.
Was that part of the program?
Yeah.
but anyway, you know, the proximity to the rivers and the lakes and the outdoor activities in that Montana offers in Southwest, Butte's a pretty good landing spot for that. And we have seen a bit of that where folks come and like, hey, it's a pretty good spot.
Are you seeing a resurgence in not just residential interest? I mean, maybe there's recreational interest. Maybe there's retirement interest. What about corporate interest?
You know, I couldn't speak as much to the corporate. We haven't seen as much of that, I don't believe. I'll tell you what's funny. We have a lot of, I don't know if it's funny, but the reality is there are so many people from Butte that have gone off and done well and moved on that all want to come back to Butte. We have a lot of folks that are retired, semi-retired, thinking about retiring. And it's funny, when they want to come home, they couldn't wait to get out of here back in the day, right? And now they all want to come home.
Yeah.
And we do see a real good positive influence of folks wanting to get back to this area.
Well, that's good, and that's encouraging to me, because a lot of people have worried that we're exporting our kids.
Uh-huh.
But there's still a big interest in those kids wanting to import themselves back into the state of Montana.
That's right, yeah. For sure.
What else is going on in Butte? We've got like 1 minute here. Just some thoughts, Mike.
You know, just I'd give you a few stats on the real estate market. You know, we've been up price-wise over the last couple of years about 26%. There's one stat that really jumped out at me that was interesting. With the lack of inventory, I wanted to see how many less homes sold in 21 versus 20.
Good.
There was actually over 100 more homes sold in 21. And what's happening is they come to the market and they get under contract and they're gone. So we do have a lack of active inventory, but it just seems like we're turning through them. Days on market are a lot less. But,
okay.
You know, in general, we need more inventory. But I think the outside folks are looking at Butte as a real value.
Well, those are a couple of good statistics for us.
For sure.
Appreciate that. Mike McLeod, break a leg up there too, okay?
You bet. Thank you very much.
Yeah, Mike McLeod from McLeod Real Estate Group. Christine Henderson's going to join us next, Executive Director of the Montana High Tech Business Alliance. We continue on the BBER's Outlook series here today in Butte with Copper King on Voices of Montana.
I'm Angela Cadell, Group Vice President of Agricultural Products for BNSF Railway. At BNSF, we recognize producers for their hard work and commitment to provide our nation's and the world's food supply. Farming is in our DNA, and we honor you with our long-term commitment of delivering your high-quality products to market safely and consistently, no matter the season. You can count on us. This is BNSF.
Back here at the Copper King, kind of like saying that. I don't know about you, but I love copper. There's copper all over the place. Christina Henderson's with us here. Are you a copper girl?
I'm a fan of copper. It's a beautiful metal.
Yeah, it is, isn't
it? Absolutely. Yeah, I have a sculpture on my wall at home that's copper.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
I've got a couple of copper mugs for making something that Butte is well known for, the home of the Moscow Mule, and thank God they shared that concoction with the rest of the world.
Yes.
Christina Henderson with us here. Tom Schultz back live at Northern News' Voices of Montana. Again, it's the Copper King for the BBER Economic Series. Montana High Tech Business Alliance. You guys been around for like, is it a decade now? Or?
Well, almost 8 years.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, look. And you have been there almost the whole time, haven't you?
Yes, I was hired by the founding board in 2014, and then we launched and grew statewide.
So on your resume is grew High Tech Business Alliance from zero to like 200, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
I had good help, though, in now Governor Gianforte, who was our founding board chair. So.
Right now, technologies guy.
He would send the companies my way, and I would sign them up. That was our strategy.
Well, and then
It paid off, though, because it seems like the alliance is attracting other companies here. It's attracting, or it's managing policies. And I think that's the thing that we need to talk about here is when you look at housing. That's one of the big focuses. High tech, obviously, we've learned you can live just about anywhere, but people want to live here, and which is one of the reasons I think we've seen some high tech growth. How much of a problem is housing currently for your high-tech industries?
It's a big challenge. And in my presentation today, I certainly highlight the tremendous success of the industry. It's growing 7 times the Montana economy, pays twice the median wage, and represented $2.9 billion in revenue last year, up from $2.5 the year before. So that's the high-level positive story. But I also talk about 3 headwinds, if we'll call them that, that are facing the industry right now. And number one is housing. And it's a real challenge for companies that are trying to attract folks in that cannot find a place to live. It's a challenge for current workers whose rents are often going up, or if they want to move into a single family home, it's really difficult for them to find that. So we're seeing tech companies are having to get involved in real estate in unprecedented ways.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Willingly, or it's just necessity, I suppose.
It's necessity, absolutely. Yeah. We're seeing cases where employers, if they want to bring somebody in, they need to be advocates for their new hires to help reach out to real estate agents or landlords and try to find them a place to live. In some cases, I'm hearing stories of companies buying homes to put people in. And I'm also hearing about them getting involved in real estate developments to try to, you know, help build some new inventory and change the dynamics of the communities. So it's a interesting time, but I think as a lot of entrepreneurs do, they're finding ways to solve these challenges that come up.
Right. And I love that. That's one of the reasons why I like the capitalistic market, because they will find solutions out of necessity.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think there's, you know, it's kind of a market problem in some ways. We have way more demand than supply. And so finding more ways to bring those new homes to market or to facilitate those transactions is key.
Yeah, that's good. And I'd like that approach too, because you know, policy can do so many things, and sometimes there's unintended consequences. I don't know if there's policy is a part of the discussion that the Montana High Tech Business Alliance gets involved in. I know that you're advocating for your businesses and things that and removing barriers for your businesses. Do you guys dabble in this kind of policy as well, because it's become a part now of the industry?
Yeah, well, you know, as an association, lobbying and policy has never been one of our kind of core pieces of our mission. We really focus on connections and networking, giving visibility to the industry and helping to fill jobs. But we do pay attention to what's happening and to issues and bills and policies that are relevant to our members. We partner with friends like the Montana Chamber of Commerce to pay attention to the sorts of bills that can either incentivize entrepreneurship and encourage folks that are building businesses, remove barriers for them, and then also certainly are paying attention to things that could improve, like technology education, for example, and helping to empower a new workforce that's prepared for these jobs of the future.
As we're talking workforce, one of the things that I see some high-tech businesses doing is maybe creating their own kind of childcare as well. I know that's a bit of a different topic, but it goes into housing. If people are paying 50% of their income for housing, you know, what do they do for childcare? And the industry has adjusted to that a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. And this pandemic has really highlighted the dire situation that we have with lack of affordable and accessible childcare. And so a lot of families, they've had family members have to drop out of the workforce because of the childcare challenges. So we've actually hosted meetings where we've highlighted some of the companies that are innovative in offering childcare. So PFL Tech out of Livingston has had a child care facility for a long time. Zoot Enterprises offers on-site childcare in Bozeman.
PFL, Print for Less, by the way.
Yeah. Yes. So they've evolved their name. Yeah. We have some great examples of companies that are big enough that they're able to offer that as a benefit, and that's an investment in their workforce to help attract and retain the workers that they need. But the reality is you have to be of a certain size for that even to be
right,
viable. And so, you know, we also have seen companies that are looking at other solutions, where can they team up and do cooperative types of things or provide a benefit of that way.
I'm going to grab some headlines, and then we'll come back in 2 minutes, and I want to talk about what's hot in Butte from the high-tech perspective. Executive Director of the Montana High-Tech Business Alliance, Christina Henderson, is with us here. Brian Bennett now for headlines.
Montana agriculture is unique, to say the least. Our landscapes and soil types are different. Our weather can be strange and unforgiving. The size of operations and distances between them can be vast. That is why a true Montana ag lender is so important. At Stockman Bank, we have a proven track record of over 65 years in Montana agriculture. Our commitment is unwavering, and our ag expertise is second to none. Contact us today and see why Stockman Bank is Montana's ag leader. Member FDIC.
Back live at the Copper King against the Montana BBER's Economic Outlook Series. This one is a focus on housing an awful lot. Christina Henderson is with us, Executive Director of the Montana High-Tech Business Alliance. She's an adjunct instructor in entrepreneurship, management, and organizational behavior at the College of Business at the University of Montana. Just a pleasure to have you on again, Christina. Let's hit Butte. What's hot high-tech in Butte?
Oh, we're seeing some very cool stories coming out of Butte. So every year we publish an annual Montana Tech Companies to Watch
list. It's really a cool thing, yes.
It's a cool thing. Yeah. And it's officially will publish later this month, but I'll give you a little preview with a couple of our Butte startups. Yeah. So one that's very cool is called BioSqueeze. And so this is a technology that's come out of Montana Emergent Technologies, which is a startup here. They're starting a whole new company, and it's a biological solution to fill leaky oil and gas wells. So it creeps into the tiny fissures underground, seals those off to prevent the leaks, and you know, is great for the environment, and then allows these companies to continue to develop their oil and gas. So we're really excited about that one. And another one is called Foothold, and they are helping to address this housing challenge that we're talking so much about today by building small manufactured homes, and their manufacturing facilities are right here in Butte. So a couple of startups that we're really excited about here locally.
That is cool. Do they now the startups to watch, that's coming out soon. We'll have you back on for that.
Yeah.
We've done that before, and it's really good. Are these companies coming to Montana? Are some of them are ideas generating from existing high-tech businesses? What's the genesis for development and high-tech in Montana?
All of the above. All of the above. So we do have, you know, some companies on the list where, you know, Montana's great quality of life is attracting some of those founders and folks to come and plant offices here. Some of these are Montana homegrown companies that are launching and starting new things here and solving the problems that we see locally. I mean, we're also seeing some cool startups that are addressing things like rural healthcare through telemedicine or the opioid epidemic, you know, finding solutions to get people treatment in rural communities. So it's really exciting to see the ways that entrepreneurs are solving these challenges that we face every day.
Is there a trend that you notice through this pandemic? I know that you saw, I would say, steady growth, but as you mentioned, the revenue increase for the state went from 2.5, I think, to 2.9 billion, which is pretty significant. Look back at the last 3 years, and what have you seen?
Well, you know, one of the things that we're realizing is that so much has changed, and I don't know if we even know all the ways. And so one of the things that our association has been doing while we're on the Outlook Tour is hosting high-tech happy hours in all the cities. So we're getting out and talking to our members and to new folks that might have come in the tech community. And it's been so interesting to see, you know, stories of folks that are maybe moving out of Bozeman to home to their ranch and are now working a tech job from their ranch in rural Montana, or folks who've been priced out of the market in Missoula and Bozeman and are coming to Butte and working remotely for Montana tech companies. So I think we're seeing more transitions and migrations out of some of the tech hubs that are really strained right now and into the rest of the state. So hopefully that'll mean a boost for all the state in terms of opportunities in tech.
Yeah, we'll catch up again. You always kill it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Fist bump. Christina Henderson, Executive Director of the Montana High-Tech Business Alliance. We're back with more. Abigail St. Lawrence will join us next here on Voices of Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
Isles Community College, we asked current MCC students why they chose MCC.
Hi, I'm Cruz McNulty, and I chose MCC because I'm on a rodeo scholarship, and they have a wonderful rodeo team.
My name is Carson Hauser, and I chose Miles Community College for the small class sizes and great education.
To learn more about Miles Community College, visit milescc.edu.
Welcome, and thanks so much for being here. Appreciate that. It is 781-627-5483. You know, we can take phone calls and text messages on the road as well now, or 866-627-5483. I just give that number out. Kind of by habit, we are, again, it's almost by habit because we appreciate these Economic Outlook series. They do it twice a year. It's the 47th annual one. Focus from the Bureau of Business and Economic Research, the BBER. Again, if you type that in on a search engine, you'll get beer and get distracted, but it is BBER, and Dr. Pat Barkey is with us here. Patrick, I appreciate you being here. We'll try to get Abigail St. Lawrence as a keynote speaker. I think she lives in Butte here too, to hear in just a little bit. But let's kind of give this overall outlook here. When you're talking about and you're a guy, you're a stat guy, you know, or data guy, right? Is that how you would put it?
That's fair.
Yeah. And there's really some interesting statistics that are coming out when you look at a 26% increase in housing prices and those things. You kind of said it in your presentation there too. We're gonna have a little bit of a sugar hangover from the stimulus money, but all those things. Labor and this pandemic and the stimulus funding have affected Montana in a lot of ways. We're seeing it in housing.
Yeah, and we're seeing an extra push in housing that exposed a lot of problems that existed, not just in the urban communities. There are some rural and smaller communities that have been impacted as well. I was just talking here at the program this morning to a gentleman from Pyramid Lumber in Sealy Lake, which is a smaller community, and he was saying that his labor problems are directly traceable to housing and the fact that there are no houses being built, et cetera. So it's not just an urban problem. We talked about it 3 years ago, 2019, in our program. We obviously didn't solve it then, Tom. And it's going to take more than 3 years to solve. But we're facing up to it. It's an issue that a lot of people told us was very important, and that's why we're doing it again.
And we're behind the eight ball almost. You kind of talked about it being almost a crisis situation. I think you said it was almost a kind of a crisis situation. But we've been behind the eight ball in dealing with that from the supply side, I suppose.
That's right. And it's really, you know, the markets are giving us an answer that's not very pleasant. And especially when you go to a community like a Bozeman, that's where you might use that crisis word. I'm not sure you would use it in Butte or even in Billings. Yeah. And we're getting closer to it in some areas. But it's been a problem where the tide has shifted out, shall we say, and exposed a lot of communities that have some serious housing supply issues that need to be addressed, I would argue, by more than just policies and more than just building, but rather a harmonization and to get people of all stripes thinking alike to try to solve.
This and that's an interesting aspect as well, using this pandemic or this crisis or this economic downturn I suppose they haven't really settled on a good term for what we're going through because we don't have clear vision on it yet. But you notice it's the labor forces, those labor force changes are profound through all of this. As an economist, and you like to do, you know, outlooks, what is the outlook for our labor in this country?
Well, the markets are adjusting. Markets are always adjusting, but right now they're extremely stressed. And those adjustments are not all to our liking. So, for example, one adjustment that we make to the unavailability of labor or the affordability of labor at a price that employers can pay is one that we don't like to see, and that's turning away work. Houses that don't get built, expansions that don't happen or they happen elsewhere, or outsourcing or whatever the solution is. Not all the solutions are ones that we like to see, but there are some very powerful forces at work here, and something has to give. And sometimes it's on that side of the ledger. Now, other ways are more creative, with respect to labor, more flexibility, tapping into pools of labor that maybe were not of prime consideration in the past. Obviously, remote work has been kind of a new wrinkle. I mean, let's face it, workers today have power. Some of them, if they can't work remote, won't take your job. So where does that leave you? Scratching your head, still working for workers. And maybe you think about how you could make remote work.
Yeah.
Or maybe it just won't.
Right.
But it's a market in the process of adjustment. And that's what we see. And some of those adjustments are not pleasant. In some ways, it's a good problem to have, but it's a very serious problem.
And it's difficult figuring these things out because we're not through this transition yet. Is that correct?
Well, there's lots of transitions going on, and the one's demographic, the other's economic. The transition really that's hitting the markets right now in terms of labor is really not that different from housing.
Okay.
And that's the surprising speed of the snapback in consumer and business spending. And you couple that with stimulus spending, and you have just enormous pressure on lots of pieces of the economy, be it overall inflation, housing, and, of course, labor. I mean, that came back so fast. People weren't prepared for it. And, of course, we're looking at a slightly different labor market today. We're looking at one where a lot of people dropped out of the labor market in the teeth of the pandemic. And especially with older cohorts of workers, they haven't come back to the same degree.
That's one thing that really stood out to me is the number of 55-plus workers who haven't entered the market yet. What do you make of that?
Well, it's rational in a lot of ways, right? I mean, you do reconsider your employment options when you get thrown out of work. And if your old employer calls you and says, please come back, lots of times you'll say yes, but there's a fraction that will say, well, I'll think about it.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of that. But there's some other things going on. I mean, oddly enough, all these things are linked. A lot of people have a lot of money because their housing has appreciated.
Right.
And so they have come up with ways that they can accelerate their retirement plans or just simply change professions. I think a lot of restaurants are talking about that. Particularly in the skilled positions. You take a cook in a restaurant that has worked as a cook for a long time, then that's the way of life. And when they get thrown out of work, they might say, well, gee, do I really want to work Saturday nights? Maybe I'll go into something else where I don't have, that kind
yeah,
of thing.
Yeah.
So that's just an anecdote. But I think that some kind of phenomenon like that, it always happens in recessions. It's happened now. That's going to take a couple years to be able to come back to something closer to normal.
Director of the BBER at Bureau of Business and Economic Research at the University of Montana, economist Patrick Barkey, Dr. Barkey, here with us. And I keep using doctor. Of course, you're a doctor. But I appreciate how you said your brother, who is a medical doctor, gets jealous every time you get to use that term, right?
Oh, I would never say that particular brother is jealous of me.
But, I see. Okay.
It's a way to get under his skin.
That's what it is. That's what it is. Yes. So I'm on your side there, okay, because I have a lot of brothers in my family. Inflation. There were some interesting comments you made about why it has come up now. We've seen inflationary pressures in the past not necessarily explode into 7% inflation, but we've got that now. Why?
Well, it's a mixture of reasons. I mean, the first is the most obvious reason. Is that we poured a lot of money into the economy, we being Congress. So the stimulus bills really came out swinging. They came out fast. They came out big. They had a big impact on the recovery, but they really put pressure on the economy. I think the other piece of it is what's going on internationally. Quite honestly, China has been a safety valve for this economy for a long time. And what I mean by that is your power as a producer to raise prices has always been limited by China. I mean, they're the low-price producer of lots of things, a little less so now today. And so that has been an important break on inflation. And with the supply chain disruptions and a lot of these things have really kind of negated that. So that's another factor. It just comes down to a third factor, by the way, is the fact that our Federal Reserve just was very complacent about the whole situation. For, in my opinion, way too long.
Yeah, that surprises me. I know you don't have an answer for that. Maybe it was political in a lot of ways, but they did not. They were very resistant in making and even coming around to inflation is here to a certain degree.
Yeah, it's hard to put that in a couple of breaths of air, but I'll try to. Yeah. I mean, the first is that the Federal Reserve is run by humans, and they make mistakes. Okay, that's the bottom line. I think the era prior to this was one where inflation was missing the Federal Reserve's targets, but it was missing it on the low side. We had inflation of less than 2%,
yeah.
And the Federal Reserve's concern was, well, how do we get prices to just nudge up just a little bit? But I think what you see right now is the Federal Reserve was reluctant to change because they had a policy that relied heavily on what they called their credibility. So in other words, if we said we weren't going to raise interest rates for another 2 years, then by gosh, we better stick to our guns and do that, or we'll, quote, lose credibility. And in doing so, they just let the genie come out of the bottle, in my opinion, and we are where we are today.
I got to take a break, and unfortunately, Abigail St. Lawrence is not able to be with us here. Something might have come up there. She's one of the keynote speakers, but Dr. Patrick Barkey is with us. And if you've got, have you got a moment with us, or?
I think so. I have to manage one transition inside the room.
Yeah. So let's check on that, and we'll come on back and with more here from the BBER's Outlook Seminar Series here in Butte, Montana. Back after that in a bit.
At the University of Montana, students learn as much under the big sky as they do on campus. UM students are tackling invasive species in the Flathead, workforce shortages in Billings, water rights in Great Falls, rural healthcare in Havre, wildlife in Yellowstone, pharmacy in Forsyth, and education in Alberton. Wherever we are, grizzlies leave their mark across Montana. Learn more at umt.edu. Up with Montana.
Abigail St. Lawrence is with us here, and one of the keynote speaker for this Outlook series. And go ahead and take a breath. And it looks like you were kind of on the run a little bit to get here. Thank you for coming in. Abigail is experienced. Let me just kind of read this a little bit. Native of Great Falls, holds a Juris Doctorate from Lewis and Clark College, lectures frequently on continuing legal education, like that, presentation of topics on easements, land use, water law, and experience in government relations work, water rights, resources, environmental, administrative law. Hello, Abigail.
Good morning. Yeah. I apologize, but unfortunately, I can't tell a district court judge I have a radio interview.
No, I tried that. I tried that every time, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, it's not going to work real well.
It's failed every time. Just kidding. Your message, you're giving the keynote speech for this economic seminar series. It's about housing, but what is your main message?
So the message that I bring is actually one of positivity, which I know sounds a little ridiculous given the housing market that we see in so many locations in Montana. But our housing market right now is the story of our success, I think. We are a phenomenally desirable state. We are a state that is growing, and a lot of other states aren't. I mean, in the last year, we've shown a 1.6% increase in population. We were one of only six states to do that.
Wow.
We are staying in our homes longer and living longer, which is a story of success. And particularly in a lot of our more desirable communities, those communities are reaping the benefits of how they have advertised and created themselves, not only within the state but outside of the state, drawing in folks who want to be here. And, you know, I also say that we need to be saying yes, not just to housing, and that does mean housing that's going to look a little bit different a lot of times than what we are used to. But also we need to be saying yes to our new residents, both residents that are migrating within the state and folks that are coming in, because the more that we reject those folks as other than and not preserving the Montana way of life, the more that's going to be self-fulfilling. Whereas if we welcome them into our communities, make them a part of who we are, we can build a better and stronger Montana that we all know and love with these new talents, new ideas, and new residents.
That's a message that might resonate with some, but others might not appreciate that message. How has it been received?
So far, actually, really well. I don't see what what Pat sees in the emailed surveys. I do know that some folks in Missoula didn't take real kindly to the idea that Butte might be a lesson for them in how to embrace new ideas and new residents.
You
and
can't teach those folks there anything. That's just admit it.
But I've also had a lot of folks coming up and saying thank you. Thank you for a message of positivity. Thank you for encouraging us to move forward together, because I think that's really the only way we do it.
I know there's a lot to this, and I'm going to have you back on at some point to talk, maybe just do a phone interview. And we got less than a minute here to are we changing culturally because of this?
You know, I don't know that we necessarily are.
Yeah.
I see, as I travel across the state, and I do work literally from Eureka to Ekalaka, a lot of what I see is just amplification with what's always been there.
Okay.
Bozeman, for example, Bozeman has the community Bozeman's always wanted. It's just a little bit more obvious now.
I see.
Here in Butte, I actually just moved to Butte this June. Love it here. This has been an incredibly welcoming community.
Great.
And this place knows how to embrace those new people and make them part of the community so that Butte keeps what makes Butte special. You know, every place is going to change, and you can either resist that and it's going to happen anyways, or you can embrace it and make it work for you. And I think those places in Montana that are thriving are those places that are embracing it and making it work.
Interesting. We're going to talk more, okay?
All
we'll
right.
do that down the road. Abigail St. Lawrence. I'm Tom Schultz. Thank you guys for joining us. We've got Broadwatch Friday tomorrow, and then, you know, be well. Thanks, Eric, in studio.